It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. We're back on the Android recording this week. Last time I tried this, it was very echoey. It sounded like I was recording in a swimming pool, but I think I fixed that problem. We'll see how it goes. And today we are back on the Beginner's Guide to Japanese Professional Wrestling. We're in 1996 and we're going to be looking at New Japan Pro Wrestling from the Egg Dome on April the 29th, not April the 4th. Well, this will take some explaining, but we're looking at Battle Formation from the Tokyo Dome and an interesting matchup for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, which we'll get to shortly. But to join me first of all today is Ashley Rose-Nova, publishing editor of Indie Empire magazine, who I have just been promoted to managing editor of. And I didn't realize. Hi, Ashley.
Hey, how's it going? So we're here. We're going to talk about New Japan. We're going to talk about the Tokyo Dome.
Indeed.
And all the mullets.
Holy all the mullets. All the mullets, you see.
Oh, lordy.
it's wrestling in the 90s, and by gum, is there some good haircuts.
Is it glorious?
Oh, yes, it's all party at the back, is this card. Very much so. What did you think? First of all, let's have a look at the magazine. Yeah, the magazine has launched worldwide. Indie Empire has come out this week. The website is there. You can find it to have a look at the stories that we've got going on there. What's kind of the emphasis behind Indie Empire? Where are you looking to go with this publication?
Well, I really wanted to do what was best for pro wrestling. Let's not just talk about or argue about, you know, who's better, WWE, AEW, NXT. Let's talk about wrestling in other countries. Wrestling, that is, you know, wrestling is global. It's a global art form. And I don't think people realize that. People didn't realize that there was promotions in South Africa. We've got a whole country of Australia with extraordinary talent. We've got, you know, we've got wrestling in Germany. That is amazing.
Yes, it is. There's GOWF and WXW, and I mean, I think we're getting to the point now where we have these super indies like Progress and WXW and Ring of Honor, I suppose, was the first one. It was the original super indie. But you've got to bear in mind, there's not just those companies in those regions, is there? There's all of these companies that are coming up underneath that are doing fantastic things, and they deserve their place too.
Yeah, they deserve a platform. They deserve a home. I did make it known to at least about 20 promotions that regardless, you know, if they want to help us, if they want to contribute, it doesn't matter. It's fine. We're going to do our best to at least show their match card so that way people know where to go, because people will watch wrestling anywhere. It doesn't matter if it's indies. It doesn't matter if it's televised, pay-per-view, New Japan. As long as they know where to go, they'll watch it. And that's a fact.
This is the thing. We do love wrestling at the Truepenny Show of all kinds and varieties, and that's why we're supported of Indie Empire magazine, because it's going to be looking at all the things, the kind of things that Truepenny Show fans want to read about. I have got a couple of articles in this month's edition. If you want to have a look at it, I look at actually some people we're looking at today, the Three Musketeers and New Japan Wrestling in the 1990s, and I also look at the fallout from Dominion and the Best of Super Juniors tournament. So I hope you would enjoy that should you get them. Also, cool interviews from all over the wrestling world.
Yeah, we've got several different interviews. You know, we've got an El Fantasmo feature for New Japan. You know, we've got a Canadian, you know, we've got the one of the Canadian champions on the cover. First time for that promotion, PCW, Premier Championship Wrestling, which is the home promotion of Kenny Omega.
There you go. I think what you're trying to do is kind of like a Daily Gong, like the Japanese magazines, but for Western all indies. Is that right? Kind of like look at the whole scene.
It's the whole scene. It's not just for Westerners. It's for everyone. You know, and I truly mean that. I want to do my best. You know, I especially want to help, you know, people that, you know, not necessarily people, but promotions that have been overlooked, countries that have been overlooked, you know, like Australia and Germany. And bring back Canada, you know, not necessarily bring it back. The wrestling's always been there, but
give it more of a spotlight.
Yeah, let people know, you know, hey, it's still there. Just go take a look.
Large country at the top there. Anyway, Right. Well, we'll move on to the actual thing we're supposed to be talking about. We are on, I think it's episode 47 of the Beginner's Guide to Japanese Wrestling. Oh, no, 40. No, yeah, well, this one will be 40, 45. There is another one coming up, which will be 46. Another one coming up, which will be 47.
It's pro wrestling. We round up.
Well, you know, I'm trying to make sure we get to the 50th. It's something really rigged, really big. This card we're looking at today is Battle Formation from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Now, there's a bit of a story to tell. If you remember our earlier Beginner's Guide series, we looked at UWFI in the run-up to 1996. I think me and Chelsea and me and Marcus both had a look at some cards from UWFI, and it was a very new and different promotion. Now, the trouble with UWFI was, because they were kind of being realistic as they could be, they were hitting each other very, very hard. And you can't run those cards on a daily basis like you can regular wrestling promotion cards. So they were only doing one show a month. And the trouble is, when you only do one show a month and you have a dojo to run and mouths to feed, you have to charge higher price tickets for the promotion. And there also is a limited number of matches you can have because, you know, matches mean more, which means the top of the card gets run through an awful lot quicker. And by the time we got to about 1995, UWFI had kind of run out of steam when it came to promotions. They were not running enough cards to be able to make money. They couldn't run enough cards to be able to make money. And the problems of running a shoot-style promotion become very, very clear in that instance. So in the summer of 1995, they began working with New Japan Pro Wrestling, as they were, to be blunt, on their uppers. And Nobuhiko Takada, who was the champion of UWFI, challenged Keiji Muto in the fall of 1995 for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, and then set about a run against some of the top stars in New Japan Pro Wrestling, which culminated with none bigger star than Shinya, the Destroyer Hashimoto, at Battle Formation in 1996. This was a card that had a lot of cross-promotional ideas on it. There was some cross-promotion with War. There was some consultation when it came to the match with the UWFI champion Takada. We'll talk about that later on as we get to the card. So having watched the card, when I said, let's do this, what were your initial thoughts, Ashley?
Honestly, it was something I hadn't seen. You know, I have seen, you know, a lot of New Japan from the 90s, but I have not particularly seen that. A lot of legends are in it, in my opinion, who I consider legends. You know, we have probably Jushin Thunder Liger probably in his prime, you know, in there as well, which I was going to ask you about that, but I'll wait until we talk about that match.
Okay, then. Yeah, because there's lots of names that are names now that weren't names then because they were the names of tomorrow then, but now they're names. For instance, this opening match, Tokumitsu Ishizawa and Yuji Nagata in the opening match, a match on the Tokyo Dome. Well, he is now, but he's gone all the way up the card and come back down again since then.
Yeah.
Ishizawa and Yuji Nagata defeated Koji Kanemoto, who's still wrestling for Wrestle 1, and Shinjiro Otani, who is still wrestling as, I'm trying to remember which promotion he works for now. Which promotion does he currently work for? He was ended up being lead booker of, can't remember which, where are we? Movies? No, thank you very much. Matches. There we go. He's 46-01. There you go. He's the managing director of 01. You know, he was big, strong mates with Shinya Hashimoto. They were the ones that went off to do 01. And this match was a bit of a corker. For those of you not seen Koji Kanemoto before, he was Tiger Mask 3. Shinjiro Otani was a well-rounded junior heavyweight. And they were taking on the heavyweight Ishikawa, who was kind of a bit of an shoot-style wrestler, and Yuji Nagata, who's all the shoot-style wrestler. 11 minutes and 20 seconds. This was a thrilling little matchup. What were your thoughts on this, Ash?
You know, it was hype impact. You know, I really, you know, particularly, I had never seen that main event in the Tokyo Dome. It was in the Tokyo Dome, correct?
This is in the Tokyo Dome.
Tokyo Dome,
it's whole card in the Tokyo Dome, yeah.
Tokyo Dome. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want to misspeak on that, but yeah, you know, the crowd was really behind that whole card. I will say that, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, New Japan's a little bit, I mean, well, it is a little bit different now as far as how, you know, the matches are lined up. I feel like they're a little bit longer, but it was, I mean, the match was very well done, very quick. The crowd was really behind that card as far as, you know, when for an opening card, it was very impressive. And that was my opinion about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they were banging out. And it was like, you were right, the crowd were really into this. Right from the opening bell for this whole show, they were up for everything. But yeah, I found it very interesting, this particular matchup, because obviously some genuine legend action going on in this particular match, and they laid everything out so well. But they're right at the beginning of their careers. Well, I suppose Antani and Kanemoto have already had their run a little bit. But yeah, but Nagata would, of course, go on to be the IWGP Heavyweight Champion within the next 5 years. And Shinjiro Otani would leave the company and become like the lead booker of 0-1. And Koji Kanemoto would have an outstanding junior heavyweight career. So it was interesting to see how this played out. But it kind of, if you look at New Japan cards now, this card kind of feels like a modern New Japan card. Like the previous ones we reviewed for the Beginner's Guide from back in 92 and 93 felt bitsy. There was like, big match, awful thing. Big match, awful thing. Really well done match, awful thing. Usually involving El Gigante. But there was bits, but this is like smooth. Everything works. Like this next match, you've got Asuma Nishimura, Riki Chosu, or Chosu Riki, I should say, Satoshi Kojima, that's Satoshi Kojima, and Takeashi Iizuka, that is Iska, the one that just retired, crazy dude from Suzuki Gun, who just retired. He was, well, not a rookie back then, he's already had 3 or 4 years on the belt. They were going against Heisei Ishingun, Yadakira Nagami, Kunaki Kobayashi, Shiro Koshinaka, Tetsuyoshi Goto, 11 minutes and 4 seconds. This Koshinaka had come back from All Japan, and he was considered like a bit of an old man at this stage. He just challenged Takada at Budokan for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship and lost to him. But this is another banging match for a 10-man. It's back and forth. There's loads of stuff going on with it. It's a really good matchup. And this is where the mullets really start to explode.
Oh yeah, that's when they started coming in pretty heavy, and they were glorious in year.
Yes, Iska's mullet was especially as you know him now as a shaved-headed gentleman, his mullet was thick and glorious.
Once again, you know, I have no complaints about this match. I mean, there was really only two matches I didn't care for, but that's later on, you know, but...
I'm guessing I know which ones are going to be.
you already know how I am when it comes to New Japan and the quality of standard I have when it comes to analyzing matches. You could probably guess which ones they are.
Definitely.
You know, it was a fatal four way. Am I correct? Yeah.
No, just a standard eight man tag.
It kind of
finished with a bit of a lumpiness because Riki Chosu just banged in a lariat and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
It kind of ended prematurely, I think. Could have done with a bit longer.
Yeah, it was just an eight man. I usually don't really go for those matches only because it's kind of just too many guys going on the same ring, but those are usually not my favorite, but you know, I really had no complaints. And like I said, you know, I was really impressed with the card, and I felt like for some reason during that era of New Japan, I really feel like that's when they got the hang of things, and that actually laid the foundation to what we see now in New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, they got completely lost within the next 10 years, but for this period from 96 to about 2001, there was nothing better. You know, they they had the right guys, they made stars on a constant basis. I mean, look at the number of guys that we've seen so far in the first two matches. You know, Shiro Koshinaka was a major superstar. Iska becomes a superstar. Nagami was a classic superstar. So was Nishimura. Chosu was a legend. Itani becomes a legend. Koji Kanemoto is this ethereal character that doesn't follow the New Japan way in the end. But again, he's a main event draw. Yuji Nagata
becomes... Yeah, you had a lot of good guys during that time.
A lot of good guys, and we've only got to match three.
Yeah, that's... And I mean, that crowd, you know, if no one's seen that match, not necessarily that match, that card, if no one's seen that event, you need to see it. Just the way that audience is, it's very different than we've seen in New Japan recently. They're very, you know, they're clapping and they're standing.
They're hot.
They're hot, and they're being vocalized too.
Yeah. Also, it's on YouTube. Go see it quick. All in one lump. Anyway, yes. Before somebody takes it down. Right. The next matchup.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the next matchup was a corker. The great Sasuke defeats Jushin Thunder Liger for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. 19 minutes and 27 seconds of arguably the two greatest junior heavyweights of their generation. I would argue that Jushin Liger is the greatest junior heavyweight of all time, and Sasuke is far behind.
Man, that's a classic match. I mean, I've seen that match by itself before. Mm. You know, because me and you have talked, you know, I grew up with, basically Jushin Thunder Liger performing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's performed, you know, I mean, since before I was born, you know, it's, that's a fact.
I've been watching him wrestle for longer than you've been alive.
Yeah, so I'm kind of, you know, I'm sad to see that he's going to retire because I haven't had that opportunity to see him live, but that's okay, you know. But man, he was wearing, you know, his black and white outfit. I didn't know necessarily at the time if maybe that was the time when Jushin Thunder Liger was a heel. That was just his standard attire at the time.
He wore black because he was wrestling Sasuke.
Gotcha.
The uniform always like signifies something, and it's usually blue or red. But if he goes to black, it means he's got to dig deeper. He knew that Sasuke was a serious threat.
So
it was creating a message in itself, and then they just tore the house down. They were just unreal at this rate. I mean,
did not slow down at all.
No.
For 90 minutes, it was just, I mean, completely smooth. You know, moves back to back. I mean, it was impressive for 90 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, this was not long after Liger had that collapsed ankle, you know, about a year before he'd had a year off with a destroyed ankle because he screwed up a baseball slide and smashed the shattered his ankle. And he's really going for it in this match. He hasn't quite got the grounded version of the Liger. He's still doing a lot of aerial stuff. But Sasuke's breathtaking as an aerial wrestler in this match. That space flying tiger drop right towards the end of the match where he landed, to be honest with you, was slightly sloppy because he caught Liger in the head with his knee. And, like, I have seen people get paralyzed from that. So,
yeah,
you know,
I noticed that too.
Yeah, so it could have been a little bit off there, but equally, it was a wrestling accident and they got up and they got away with it. But, yeah, Sasuke, when Sasuke's mental, let's just point this out. Not long after this, he's having no rope, double hell, death, exploding barbed wire matches with Anita. And you have no doubt seen Senor Lariato's thread of gifts of all the crazy stuff he's done, like jumping off ladders whilst wearing a barrel. But, and the chain-smoking heel he played in Michinoku Pro later in his career. But it's Sasuke, he's just awesome. He just does things that are amazing. And Liger loves Sasuke. Liger thought he was the best junior heavyweight in the world. He loved Michinoku Pro more than he loved, as much as he loved New Japan. They said, I go see Michinoku Pro show and everybody's killing each other to get everybody else over. They said they're so selfless. They're awesome to work with because you know they're going to do exactly what they ask them to. So he was the reason why he wanted Sasuke in that match. And I think it was the right call myself.
Yeah, I mean, it was very good. I was very impressed. And you could tell there was that mutual respect at the end of the match.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yes, there was a handshake and a move on for both men, which would be the Super J Cup, the first year that they did the All Champion Super J Cup, which we will probably talk about when I found a decent copy of it.
Oh, I'm so happy that the Super J Cup is back. It was one of my favorite tournaments, and I'm very glad that it's back this year.
Yeah.
I was like excited, overly excited about it.
With Liger booking as well, just like the old days, Liger's got the run of the board. He can book who he wants. So there you go. Yeah. Sasuke versus Liger, excellent match. By the way, any extra information I found out about this card, I've got from Eggshells, the book from Chris Charlton, which you should read because it's the history of every card at the Tokyo Dome ever. I think up until this year's Wrestle Kingdom. He did a fantastic job with it. It's an excellent piece of work. And there's loads of interviews with people all the way through this card. So I will slip bits of information in. You should go buy the Eggshells book for Chris Charlton. It's really, really cool. Next matchup was Randy Macho Man Savage, and he defeated Hiroshi Tenzan. Yes, that Hiroshi Tenzan of, like, Tenkozi fame, who's, you know, opening card guy now. 9 minutes and 49 seconds. interesting clash of styles in this particular.
Yeah. This is one of the matches I didn't care for. I like, don't get me wrong, I like Randy Savage, I like the Macho Man. I love all wrestling, first of all. Let me just make that known. But you know, I do judge on different standards when it comes to different types of styles. But it was my least favorite, one of my least favorite matches of the card. Honestly, because 9 minutes is just too short for me.
Having said that, Hiroyoshi Tenzan's mullet in 1996 was at its absolute pomp.
Let's be honest, that was the highlight of the match.
Yes, I mean, it's glorious, it's swept back, it's got shaved sides, it's got frosted tips, it's just wonderful. I mean, today, his haircut's exactly the same. I don't understand how he does this 26 years later. But in 96, it's lush, it's long, it's mullet.
Yeah, that's the highlight of the match, guys. And it was 9 minutes.
To be fair, Randy has been known to throw a bit of a wobbler with people he doesn't get along with. But he liked Tenzan. Do you know why he liked Tenzan?
Was it because of the mullet?
No, he liked Tenzan. Okay. He liked Tenzan because he let him drop out. He let him kick out the elbow drop.
Oh, okay.
The only other two people to kick out the elbow drop: Diamond Dallas Page, Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, that is true.
And Hiroyoshi Tenzan. So there you go. Oh, maybe Hogan as well. This is a short list, though. But Savage, yeah. There's a story about the story about DDP that was on WCW TV, and Arn Anderson was like, "You're wrestling Randy Savage in the main event tonight, but whatever you do, you have to go speak to him, find out what he wants to do. He's got creative control." Because it was the day was when WCW were giving all the wrestlers creative control. And Diamond Dallas Page had grown up through the company from being, like, you know, a young boy, essentially, at 36, all the way to the main event. Mm-hmm. And Arn and Dallas go into the dressing room, and Arn goes, "Mr. Savage, what would you like to do?" And Savage is stretching out. He goes, "Well, I think I'd like to take a diamond cutter tonight." And Dallas goes to Arn, what did he say? And he's like, "Yeah, okay then." So anyway, they go to the ring, they have the match. Dallas hits the diamond cutter, 1, 2, 3, pinfall. And Diamond's laying there on his back, and Randy scores out to him, he's also laying on his back. He said, "Well, I guess we know what we're doing next week." I love Randy Savage for that reason. It was just such a brilliant story. Anyway, yeah, but Savage and Tenzan could have been dreadful, but it wasn't awful. Nothing on this card is awful. It's all pretty good.
It's all pretty good. I'm just saying, compared to the other matches, kind of lacked a little for me.
Yes, so. I can see where you're coming from that. The next matchup, though, is interesting. It's Masahiro Chono versus Lex Luger. And I will tell you, this is the best Lex Luger match I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree with you. But that was not the second match I didn't care for.
That good in comparison to everything else on this card, but it's actually not bad. It's watchable.
It's good for him.
And it's even more remarkable because this is after Steve Austin dropped Masahiro Chono on his head and broke his neck.
Ooh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it really shouldn't be that good. But at this point, Chono was working on charisma and has this magnetism to him that is like he's just unreal at controlling a crowd. And funnily enough, person in the front row was Eric Bischoff, obviously there's part of the WCW talent crossover deal, who was paying very close attention to those black shades and those back clothes of Masahiro Chono, because in 12 months' time, it'd be the time of the NWO. And that was very much related to Chono's look. They borrowed Chono's look for the NWO an awful lot, but also they borrowed an awful lot of stuff off this particular card anyway. But Bischoff was sat there, front row center, writing down notes. Very important card in the history of professional wrestling for not just New Japan and World Association Wrestling and UWF, but specifically for WCW as well. What are your thoughts on this one, Masahiro Chono versus Lex Luger?
I didn't, like I said, it was the second match I didn't care for. I do want to say something, though.
What's that?
And make it clear to people. A lot of known promotions do borrow from New Japan a lot of their ideas.
Yeah, they do. Very true.
Not to point anything or say anything, but let's call a spade a spade. The AEW championship belt, does it not look like the heavyweight belt for New Japan, but with the extra gold? I mean, come on, let's just call a spade a spade.
This is true. Also, would point out that New Japan did steal the invasion angle from themselves, well, kind of from All Japan, when they let Ricky Choso and his group of wrestlers become Ishin Gun. When they left New Japan and end up joining All Japan, that was the first serious invasion. And if we go back, there was obviously UW, the Pro Wrestling International company that invaded both New Japan and AJPW in the early 80s when they closed their doors. So they're not. This wasn't an original idea, but this is the one that set up New Japan for the idea of how it could work, which is going into All Japan Pro Wrestling. People liberally borrow in pro wrestling because there is literally nothing new under the sun.
There is nothing new. It's been done. You know, pretty much everything's been done. Yeah. It's kind of, you know, when you read a comic book. You know, back in the day when I was in the comic book industry, I had a conversation with one of my old mentors, Jerry Ordway, and I told him, you know, one time I brought up a recent, you know, storyline, and he was all, pfft. And I was like, what do you mean, pfft? You know, and he's all, well, you know, once you've been doing this for so long, nothing surprises you or nothing's new. We actually had a similar story like that 10 or 15 years ago.
It is true. There is like stories that just keep repeating. It is. Well, I'm like looking at Impact Wrestling this week, and Killer Cross is essentially doing the same storyline with Eddie Edwards that Eli Drake did 6 months ago. It's not even like 10 years apart now. It's now even 6 months. People aren't paying attention long enough, apparently. Anywho, yeah. Masahiro Chono does look, because he is the coolest man on earth. So obviously he looked absolutely stunning, but Luger didn't look that bad either, particularly in this particular matchup. But Chono was charisma. He's smooth and, you know, best wrestling dad ever. Because he's the dad of Jazzy Gabbert from WWE NXT UK. Adoptive father, let's put it that way. Unofficially adoptive father. Chono-san is very proud of Jazzy. But yeah, it was cool to see. I forgot how cool Chono looked in a wrestling match. It was past his super worker period, which was a couple of years before. For those of you who don't know the story, Steve Austin, and it's actually kind of a chilling story. Steve Austin was wrestling Masahiro Chono in a mixed tag one night in Tokyo, picked him up for a tombstone pile driver and sat down with the spike pile driver. Funnily enough, exactly the same move Owen Hart broke his neck with 2 years later.
Yeah,
and he broke Chono's neck. And Chono never really fully recovered, but he was able to have another 15-year career by changing his style and working his way around. It became much more of a brawler, which is funnily enough exactly what Steve Austin had to do when he had his neck injuries as well. So it was interesting parallels, but just one of those things, I guess. Wrestling injuries are fickle business. Anyway, next, moving on to the next match, which was another barnstorming dream match. Luger versus Chono was gearing on for dream match territory, but Power Warrior and the Road Warriors versus Scott Norton and the Steiner Brothers, that's dream match territory right there. You know, the two hottest tag teams on the planet, two of New Japan's biggest big hitters in a six-man tag, and by God, the crowd popped for this. When Scott Norton and Steiner came out, they were popping like mad. And then when Iron Man hit, it was like the place erupted. The few people on Earth can make a Tokyo Dome crowd pop like the Road Warriors could. Match though with Shinsuke Sasaki, and it was through the roof. This was outstanding. So if you guys got a timeline of what the Road Warriors were about, if you remember, they were in the WWE for SummerSlam 88. SummerSlam in Wembley Stadium in 1994. Not straight after that, Hawk left the company and went to Japan to tag with Shinsuke Sasaki as the Hellraisers. And then they came back together as the Road Warriors with Road Warrior Hawk and Animal in 97. And, 95. And then they went back to New Japan and started attacking with Sensaki as part of their WCW deal. Steiner Brothers had come back from WWE. They started tagging with Scott Norton in Japan because they had both baby faces, but obviously in WCW, Scott Norton was a heel. So they couldn't tag together in WCW. So this ended up being one hell of a matchup. because essentially nobody sells anything for 15 minutes. They just hit each other really hard.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's pretty much it. But hey, the crowd did pop. I mean, I kind of popped a little bit because I'm not going to lie. I had no idea. I didn't know what to expect going into. I didn't know what this card lineup was going into this.
It was on the video. I said it was in the description. Did you not read it?
I didn't read the description. I just watched it. I like to be surprised, okay?
To be honest with you, I've seen this match 3 or 4 times before, and I was surprised because I didn't read the description either. But
Last night I was analyzing a match that I had 17 minutes in. I was like, I've seen this match before.
Well, this was just corking. This was beautifully executed, battering of each other. I mean, it's not like a great tag match in the sense. There's one gigantic clangor towards the end because Scott Steiner gets Kensuke Sasaki with a Frankensteiner, and Hawk doesn't get there in time, so Sasaki has to kick out the Frankensteiner in a period of time when no one kicked out the Frankensteiner. So that was a bit of a miscommunication. Yeah. But other than that, it was a cracking match. It was just big lads wrestling, big lads hitting each other.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was good too for what it was. And I also want to recommend to anyone, if you have don't even look at a match card light, just go watch the actual event, and you'll be surprised how exactly you feel compared to knowing what's actually on the card.
Yeah, true. Right then, we move on to the next matchup, which is another one of those matches that was an interesting booking, let's put it this way. The Great Muta defeats Jinshei Senzaki in 19:44 seconds. Now, here's the deal. This was considered an American challenge match, because neither of them are American. However, the Great Muta's name was made in WCW, an American company. And Jinshei Senzaki's name was made in the WWE as Hikushi, or WWF as it was there in his feud, first with Bret Hart and Barry Horowitz and Chris Candido. And this was considered a comeback match for Senzaki. It was his first major Japanese match since returning from North America. And funnily enough, Chris Charlton talked to him in eggshells, and he said he promised himself he wouldn't go to New Japan and do any matches from New Japan unless he could get a Tokyo Dome shot. The first thing they said was, do you want to come wrestle in the Tokyo Dome? And he was like, yeah, all right then. So that was one thing. The match itself is excellent. Senzaki starts, obviously, well, I should say the Great Muta's wrestling is the Great Muta. So it's the full face mask and the deal with the kimono and the whole nine yards and the music. And he comes down and it's just the crowd's absolutely electric for it. They haven't seen Muta for a couple of years at that point. Senzaki comes down in the full body gear with the full body paint like he did do in WWF, which wasn't something he did every night because it took far too long to do. But he did that. He also came down with a Shinto blessing post, which he tied to the ring post to ward off ghostly spirits, because Muta is a ghost. He's a ghostly spirit. It's like, it's so well put together and so well done. And then they beat Seven Bays of shit out of each other. There was blood everywhere! Because Muta went and attacked, broke the prayer post, and then started slicing and dicing Senzaki with it. Senzaki was all over the place. It wasn't a particularly good showcase for Senzaki because he admitted himself he probably got the nerves and didn't do what he could have done in that front of that particular audience. And he thought it was a bit strange because he normally said, I normally get nerves in front of 200 people, not 65,000. So I think that was interesting from what he said about the match. But I don't think he looked out of place. He looked like long. And I kind of thought, like, I would see him in a lot more major main events in big Japanese companies than he did in that time period. But what do you think of this one, Ashley?
Yeah, no, it was a really good match, you know. Probably, I would say, probably the one of the best matches on the card. Not that, you know, like I said, you know, the card was completely good, but this was, in my opinion, probably the best match.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's more character development to it, and it's
more storytelling.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know, very perfect. You know, a lot of really good in-ring psychology there. Great storytelling. I honestly thought it was one of the best matches.
I think so as well. I mean, just from like a pure entertainment point of view, it's a better story being told than anything else on this card. And also, it's kind of like a blank because obviously Shizaki only came in to do this one match. He didn't wrestle anything else. He went back to Michinoku Pro after that, was kind of booking Michinoku Pro after the, after this. So he kind of came back and just did the one thing. So for him, it was difficult to get in and get out, I think. Yeah. And also, he didn't wrestle very often either by this time because Kiji Muto is trying to be Kieji Muto and establish his own persona as the main thing about New Japan at the time. But it's still thoroughly entertaining to watch, but it is a bit gruesome.
Yeah, it is. I won't sugarcoat it either. It is really gruesome.
Blood everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Pretty much.
Semi-main event of the evening, which pitted Wars, that's Wrestling and Romance's Genichiro Tenryu. Now, we talked a lot about Genichiro Tenryu in the past on the Beginner's Guide to Japanese Professional Wrestling, defeating stalwart New Japan's first-generation star, Tatsumi Fujinami, in an incredibly short 9 minutes and 16 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, Genichiro Tenryu had been running SWS. Mm-hmm. That morphed into Wrestling and Romance, or World Association R. And essentially, War was kind of in the same position that UWFI was. The thing is, because they were a wrestling promotion and not a shoot fight promotion, they had a lot more people who were useful to New Japan Pro Wrestling, as you probably imagine. They kind of morphed Tenryu into being Takada, if that makes sense. So they had Takada as like the champion at the time, but they were clearly moving towards Tenryu being the main event draw for a while and taking the belt somewhere away from Takada, or trying to put the onus on Tenryu being a champion sooner rather than later. And beating Fujinami, the major star of the company for the previous 15 years, in 9 minutes and 16 seconds, is a right strong way to get over get a Tokyo Dome crowd behind you as a threat to the main event. In a perfectly watchable match, it wasn't pulling trees up. Its job was to get Tenryu over, and I have to say that it did that. What are your thoughts there?
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have any additional notes on that. I absolutely agree with you on that one.
It also is like there's two massive names. This sells itself, and it quite rightly is the second main event of the card. But 9 minutes and 16 seconds is awfully short for two old charges like this. It really should have been there all night.
it did do its job. It did. Yeah. And even though it was only 9 minutes, I personally would have liked to see that match maybe go over maybe 4 more minutes, 4 or 5 more, to see what it was going to, what it could be. Besides, you know, it was still good. It did. Served its purpose, but I would have been interested to see it, you know, extend a little bit longer. But I don't have any additional notes on it.
I mean, you're not going long. I mean, the longest match on this card is the Shinzaki Muta match, 19 minutes and 44 seconds. When you consider the main event these days is 38 minutes on a regular basis, it very rarely goes below 20 minutes unless it's Bad Luck Farley, bless him. He physically can't go longer than 16 minutes. But, you know, it's still like the way that the wrestling's run in this particular time period is way different to what it's run now.
We can agree on that.
But the actual booking content isn't much different. This was a golden era from New Japan. Gedo talks a lot about strong style evolved, and this is really the key era of strong style. Now, Tenryu also is obviously one of the key proponents of King's Road style. He's come in from All Japan Pro Wrestling. And there is a certain, like, standoff in styles between Fujinami, who's all flow and grace, and Tenryu, who's major moves and big hits, because that's the way the difference is between strong style and King's Road. So that's an interesting dichotomy. They don't both make it work, because they're too good not to make it work. But it's interesting to see how that style crosses over. And it was really the first example of that. Nowadays, you have guys like Okada, you have guys like Ishii, who have that King's Road style kind of drilled into them, and apply it to strong style. Whereas this is one of the first times a major All Japan star of any era appearing on New Japan cards on a regular basis. So it was true dream match territory.
Mm-hmm.
Right then, we move on to the main event of the evening. Well, so Meltzer gave this 4 stars. The cage match users give it 8.79. Shinya Hashimoto defeats Nobuhiko Takada in 12 minutes and 53 seconds for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship of the World in a very hard-hitting heavyweight match. Now, Takada was supposed to be the real deal, and Hashimoto really took it to him fact that he beat him in 12 minutes and 53 seconds will tell you they emphatically wanted to win the series with UWFI. Now, apparently everything was all smiles in the run-up to Takada winning the championship and even defending it. But he defended it against Koshinaka, not a big name. And then he lost the belt to Hashimoto. So there was some consultation that UWFI didn't think they got the best out of the deal of what they were promised. And when they got home after this card, Takada only got half the payoff he was promised as well. So that left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth for Takada. Having said that, the match with Hashimoto was outstanding, but it was awfully short because they were going at each other full bore. The kicks that they were delivering on each other, when Hashimoto kicks you, you know about it, because he's 280 pounds and built like an oak. So he was unreal in this matchup. He starts kicking Takada. Takada's known as the biggest kicker in pro wrestling at the time, and Hashimoto kind of like Charlie horses him within the first minute. So that was kind of an interesting layout to this match. And it became about submissions as we knew it all would. But Hashimoto finishes the match with a Northern Lights DDT, a brainbuster, and then a triangle choke to round things off, which makes for interesting viewing in this cross-breed specialist match. What are your thoughts on this particular matchup, Ashley, and your thoughts on its statement within New Japan and within the UWFI?
It's unfortunate, you know, that did happen afterwards and they did not get the best deal. I will say that. But as far as the match, I mean, I thought it was good. I enjoyed, you know, it was a unique setup, you know, exactly how you pointed out. It was unique.
Oh, yeah. You can't deny that. This was like, you weren't going to get anything else like this in professional wrestling, which is really what pro wrestling is about. It was about presenting unique, giving unique presentations to an audience that's willing to pay for it. They did this there. 65,000 people turned up to see something special, and they got to see something special.
Yeah, so, I mean, I really, you know, I enjoyed it because I thought it was unique and it stood out from the rest of the card, you know, regardless if it wasn't that long. And, you know, it is unfortunate as far as the background history of it. But, you know, the setup as far as the moves, you know, the finisher, yeah, completely unique, stood on its own, you know. It, in my opinion, it looked different than the rest of the matches, and I liked it. And, you know, the crowd really enjoyed it. I can tell, you know, they were standing, they were applauding, which, you know, you don't really see that often anymore in New Japan.
No, we don't get standing ovations very often these days. It's kind of become, I think possibly because New Japan fans are spoiled, they get like these high quality matches constantly all the time, whereas this was something special, even on a Tokyo Dome show. And it was, like, this entire card was a slow build to something fantastic, and it was so well-paced as well.
Yeah, I mean, those are my thoughts as far as the main event. I mean, I had never actually seen this event, so it was a privilege for me to watch it. I can honestly say that I had never seen it.
Yeah.
The only match I've probably seen is the Jushin Thunder Liger one.
Yeah. I mean, well, I Hashimoto was something special as a heavyweight champion. And you see a lot of Okada in Hashimoto. Not necessarily a wrestling star, because Okada's much more lucha libre and he's much more smooth. And it's all about high impact, big moves for him. But Hashimoto was about that too. The Destroyer. You know, he was there. It was a notorious slow starter, just like Okada. He paced his matches really well, just like Okada. Always end with a big flourish of offense, just like Okada. Mm-hmm. You know, for the way Jado has built Okada over the last decade, it very much relies on what Antonio Inoki was doing with Shinya Hashimoto 20 years ago. Takada, again, is just that exact kind of opponent that Hashimoto could really sing with. He had really good matches with Fujinami as well. People who are trained in the King's Road tradition. Doesn't mean he's terrible with anybody else. In fact, he really loved wrestling other guys from outside the company. In fact, that would be his downfall within the company. However, Takada is just the right guy for Hashimoto to get the best out of. Things don't turn out too well for UWFI because they lose the deal with New Japan, they lose exposure, and they're already exposed as a non-real promotion because they worked with a non-real company, New Japan Pro Wrestling. So all the reasons for watching UWFI suddenly dry up. Takada tries his hand at a mixed martial arts with mixed results and eventually retires back to being pro wrestler again in a couple of years' time. I'm sure we'll talk about that when he goes back to actual entertainment-based professional wrestling in Hustle, as he becomes General Takada, the man that wants to destroy professional wrestling, which is a whole different ball game. But we'll get back to that in time. I'm glad you enjoyed this card. Have you got anything else to add, Ashley?
No, I have nothing else to add. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, you know, it was, I didn't read, you know, the match lineup, even though it was on the bottom, just because I just decided to start doing that when it comes to older events, just so that way I can feel a little bit more excitement and not be so biased in a sense.
Yeah.
I try, you know, really hard not to. I apologize to everyone for coughing. You know, it is allergy season here. Pretty bad in Georgia.
We're both suffering from hay fever. It's pretty awful over here too, to be honest with you. Because I can't stop sneezing, which hurts. But there you go. Right then. Well, thank you very much for joining us today and listening to the True Penny Show, Beginner's Guide to Professional Wrestling, looking at Battle Formation from New Japan in 1996. Next week, we'll be looking at something we haven't decided yet. Super Showdown, Southern Super Showdown show, Southern thing from Australia that New Japan are doing, which I believe has Will Ospreay versus Robbie Eagles in the main event for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah,
it should be really cool. You should go and buy Indie Empire magazine. You can find it. What's the website there, Ashley?
Indie Empire Mag. That's INDIE Empire and then Mag, MAG.com. And then you just click magazine and you'll have all the different options. We've got a high quality option. We've got a low, you know, we have an economical friendly option and we have digital. So we are up and running.
There you go. And you can look at mainly features in the magazine and there'll be news on the website. Basically, that's what we're trying to do, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's really it. We want to just support wrestling in a different manner when it comes to wrestling journalism. You know, you and I can agree, you know, things are different now. So there ain't nothing wrong with being old school and doing a little hard work.
No, that's true. You can also find the Indie Empire magazine on Twitter at Indie Empire. I can't remember Twitter. What's the Twitter handle?
Indie Empire Zine, Z-I-N-E, because someone took magazine, but they're not real. They're not the real Indie Empire.
So Indie Empire Zine on Twitter. You can find Ashley. Where can we find you on your social medias?
You can find me on Twitter and you can find me on Instagram at Ash Rose Nova, NOVA.
Okay. You can find me at True Penny Show on Twitter. Also, you can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find the show at True Penny Show on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook, The True Penny Show. You can find us on Patreon, where you can keep The True Penny Show free forever for everyone, along with our new Spencers in the Empire magazine. There you go. You can also find us on powerslam.tv, where you can use arm code MULLETWATCH to get 1 month off your free, or sorry, 1 month off, 1 month free off your subscription to powerslam.tv. We will be back next week. Sorry?
Yep. And then after they use your code, they can come and use my code, ROSENOVA, for powerslam.tv, and you'll get month two.
If you want to get that. If you want to get your friend a subscription, then use a different subscription. Maybe you need two subscriptions.
Yeah, one, it's just that awesome.
You're just not showing enough commitment to powerslam.tv if you only pay for it. No, I don't think that's going to work. Anyway, try. We try. Do what we can. Anyway, you can find us on all of our social media sites. Please come back and please follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from, you'll be able to find us. This week, we're continuing the story of Doc and Gordy in All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 1990s with the third part of the Miracle Violence Connection story on Telling Stories tomorrow. On Wednesday, I believe Dara is continuing the SmackDown 6 storyline and his review there from the guys in Dublin. Take care anyway. Speak to you soon, and I'll see you next week. Bye.
Laters.
Stop recording.